All right, everybody. Thanks so much for coming. This is the panel session on transitioning from coal to clean energy, or to renewable energy, and we're very excited to have you here. I'm sure people will be coming in. Please fill into the front. The front rows are all open. We almost had one in the front row, but not quite. So there's plenty of room. And if people are coming in, feel free, scoot in and be accommodating to the best you can so that everybody has a comfortable spot here for this breakout session. I'm Tyler Huebner, Executive Director of Renew Wisconsin. I'm going to give a few kind of opening remarks, and then we're going to hear two different perspectives today. So we've got Elizabeth Cott-Reinders from the Sierra Club and Tom Content from the Citizens Utility Board. Both of these individuals live and work in Wisconsin. Elizabeth also covers some other states. But this is an issue that's going on in other states as well, and so we'll bring some of that perspective in. As we get started here and people are coming in, there's room right in the front, and feel free to fill in. Wanted to get a sense of how many are in the room that are in the renewable energy industry. And how many of the room are with a public utility or regulatory or policy? Okay, a few. How many are advocates or sort of just supporters of renewables, not otherwise associated? Okay. Any other folks that I miss? Sort of. Scott's all three. He is everything. I love it. Any other things that I missed as far as, yeah. County government, local government. Okay, local government officials. Others? Higher ed or students, any students or education folks? Thank you. Great. Yeah, a few. Well, we're so excited to do this today. This is a new panel that we haven't done in the past, but it's an issue that's really starting to bubble up. We heard about it a little bit in the policy panel, which is that, and I'm going to kind of just lay the groundwork. I've mentioned we'll have Elizabeth and Tom on the panel. This is 2017, this is our electricity production in Wisconsin. So about half is coming from coal-fired power plants in Wisconsin as of 2017. And on the other side of that, as I mentioned at the start, we've got Madison Gas and Electric, Xcel Energy, and Governor Evers have all mentioned some flavor of reaching 100% clean energy or 100% carbon neutral or something like that. Our other major utilities, the We Energies companies and Alliant are looking for 80% carbon reductions. And so we know that to meet those types of goals, we're going to have to retire coal plants. That is the largest carbon emitting source. If you pick coal versus natural gas, nuclear, renewables, there's more carbon coming from the coal than those other sources. So we know over time that's going to go away. And how does this transition happen? And how can we accelerate it? How can we do it in a way that's best for customers? That's kind of the perspectives we're going to have. So wanted to kind of lay the groundwork here. What do we have for remaining coal plants in Wisconsin? This may not be an inclusive list, but this is some of the larger coal plants that we have in place in Wisconsin today. Columbia 1 and 2, these are approximate numbers, but about 1,100 megawatts. South Oak Creek, about 1,135. Elm Road Generating Station, 1,270. Weston 3 and 4. Edgewater 5, Genoa, and J.P. Magid. Those two last ones are Dairyland Power Cooperative plants. And then I want to focus on the year they were built. You know, mid-70s, 1960, 2011, 80s and late 2010s, mid-80s. Usually these plants are amortized for about 60 years historically. And so as you sort of look at that column and then add 60 years, you get to this right-hand column. When, under normal operation, business as usual, if nothing changed, when would those plants run until, right? And so we're in 2020 today, and we're looking at 2030s, 2040s, 2040s. I don't have all the answers. This is just indicative of the way these plants have been planned and financed and amortized is 60 years. So if you want those to go away sooner, how are you going to handle that, right? Again, just kind of setting the stage, how do coal plants and really any other utility plants get paid for? The easiest analogy that I have, and I'm not the 100% expert, is at a high level, it's not that different from how a home mortgage works, right? So every month or every year, you're paying off some of the principal, and you're paying an interest payment to the bank on the remaining amount of the principal. And depending on the asset, it might be amortized 60 years for a power plant, maybe it's 30 years for a solar power plant, you know, whatever the useful life is expected to be. So as we think about that amortization over 60 years, and now let's say you want to close it after 30 years, you want to close it after 40 years, there's an unpaid balance, right? And so if you have a house and you decide to move, you can sell your house to somebody else. But if you just decided not to live in it and move somewhere else, you know, the bank is going to still expect you to pay every month, right? You have a mortgage. So those are some of the challenges at the high level as we think about this transition. We've got different perspectives to talk about how to navigate that. What's basically happened, I think most folks in the room are aware of that, is within this 60-year lifespan, innovation has struck, is one of the key takeaways, right? Is that the cost of some of the alternatives has dropped dramatically. We've got wind costs down 70% and solar down 88% in the last decade. And so there's a cost to run those coal plants, and in some cases, the cost to build a new solar plant now may be cost competitive with the operating costs of a coal plant. So those are creating challenges and opportunities for utilities and other actors in this transition. And there's other reasons for coal retirements, and Elizabeth will talk a little bit about that. But that's kind of the intro that I wanted to give and the setup. And now we're going to hear from Elizabeth Kott-Reinders from the Sierra Club. And please welcome Elizabeth.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you, Tyler and Renew, for inviting me to be here. And thank you, Tom, for being on the panel together. I'm excited to be here. I care passionately about this issue, and so I'm literally setting my five-minute timer to stick to Tyler's time request here, because I could talk about this for a long time, but we'll keep it introductory. So my name is Elizabeth Kott-Reinders. I am a deputy director for the Sierra Club, and I live here in Madison, Wisconsin, and I cover states including the Dakotas, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, and Illinois. A quick bit about Sierra Club and the Beyond Coal campaign. Sierra Club is the nation's largest and oldest grassroots environmental organization. We have 3.8 million members and supporters across the country. In Wisconsin alone, we have about 18,000 members. So the Beyond Coal campaign, it began back in the George W. Bush days of the coal rush, when there were over 200 new coal plants on the drawing board. We started by fighting the newly proposed coal plants and then moved on to retiring the existing fleet. So where are we now? The Beyond Coal campaign is working. It's a national effort of the Sierra Club, working to do the following here. I don't need to read it line by line, but we're working to eliminate coal's contribution to climate change no later than 2030. We want to retire the existing fleet and replace that with clean energy, energy efficiency, storage. We want to stop the construction of new coal and new fracked gas power plants, and we want to keep it in the ground. We want coal reserves underground and out of world markets. So why focus on coal? There's many reasons. One of the main reasons is that coal has massive carbon emissions. And as we know, carbon emissions are a major contributor to climate change, to climate disruption. In addition to climate, there's significant health and environmental impacts from cradle to grave. So from extraction and mining to transport to storing unburned coal piles, where you have toxic coal dust that blows in the wind, to the air emissions that contain, you know, really a toxic mess of mercury, lead, sulfur dioxide, nitrous oxide, particulates, other heavy metals. So when coal is burned, it's releasing this. Even when you have controls on a plant, it's there. We also know it doesn't go anywhere. So you put air controls on, well, it comes out somewhere. So there's also water pollution, not only from the wastewater, but when you have coal ash in a pond leaching into groundwater. I won't belabor the point, but the point is coal is a dirty fuel that's it's poisoning people, and it's poisoning our air and our water. But it's not just the climate impacts and the health impacts. We're focusing on coal. There's major economic impacts. So as Tyler said, the market's changing. coal can't compete. That's good news for a lot of folks in this room. It's good news for everyone as it can help accelerate this transition from coal to clean energy. If you saw last year, Forbes had an article, 74% of existing coal can't compete economically with new renewables. The book life for coal plants, like Tyler was talking about that mortgage, what it's worth, we have to keep in mind that was an engineering estimate. So what happens when the market, the cost of energy, and science, both technological developments and climate science, changes the playing field? Not only was it that first investment in the coal plant, but hundreds of millions of dollars in upgrades, retrofits, replacement parts. So we're left with this problem where we have a lot of debt and not a lot of value. So Sierra Club is looking to accelerate this transition from coal to clean for all the reasons I mentioned. And there's tools out there like securitization and other financial tools that can allow utilities to exit this economic coal while protecting customers and investor interests. When done correctly, applying these financial tools can help utilities pay off the remaining debt of expensive coal plants, protect ratepayers from excessive costs, and provide funds that are available for reinvestment in clean energy. That's going to bring the long-term cost savings to the customers because you'll have cheaper energy, cheaper fuel costs. And it can also, when done well, provide a pool of transition funds for affected communities, including the workers at the plant, communities who are benefiting economically from the plant being in that region. So at the risk of oversimplifying, securitization is a de-risking mechanism, right? So if a utility is running a coal plant that is uneconomic, theoretically, they face the regulatory threat of disallowance if continued operation continues non-economically. So securitization, it's not a silver bullet, but it is a tool that can be used to reduce a utility's risk, and that brings benefit right there. It's one more way to remove the barriers of early retirement of coal plants. It's not passing securitization doesn't even necessarily mean that a utility has to use it. It's a tool available to them, and it's essentially a no-regrets mechanism, a no-regrets tool that you can give utilities, regulators, and consumers the flexibility to make economically rational decisions. And as we look at this aging and expensive generation that's going to need to come offline, we have to find ways where we can deliver these cost savings. So very briefly, as I try to move it towards a wrap-up here, since we'll have time to talk more in depth about these things, I wanted to share that Sierra Club is working on securitization and other innovative financial tools across the country, and these are some of the resources. If you want to snap a picture and do some Googling, Sierra Club put out a report at the end of 2018, Harnessing Financial Tools to Transform the Electricity Sector, with Uday Varadarajan, David Posner, Jeremy Fisher. There's a blog post that summarizes it really nicely by my colleague Jeremy. And then I want to draw your attention to this brain trust of securitization experts, financial tool experts, that's called the National Utility Finance and Securitization Project. So my colleagues, Jeremy Fisher, Brendan Pierpont, are on that, but you may recognize some of these other names. There's a whole host of folks on there. The very last point I'll make before I turn it over to Tom is that while we are here talking about a transition from coal to clean energy, I want to point out that there have been economic analyses that are getting more and more traction in the news and that you may be hearing more and more about. Rocky Mountain Institute developed a formula, Sierra Club has used it, to do economic analysis of proposed gas plants compared to a clean energy portfolio alternative where you're looking at efficiency, conservation, storage, renewable energy. And what we're finding is that they're projecting that new gas plants are going to strand within 10 years of when they're built. So my point is not to shift the conversation today to gas, but to point out that we need to be really intentional in these conversations we're having, or we're going to be right back here again talking about how we deal with the hundreds of millions of dollars that we've been saddled with for a gas plant that became uneconomic and uncompetitive 10 years after coming online. So, Tyler, I took another minute than I needed. I apologize. Here's how to reach me, and I'll be happy to answer questions in the panel.
All right. Thank you so much, Elizabeth. And now for our other perspective, Tom Content of the Citizens Utility Board.
I've got my timer.
Okay.
I'm going to try. Hi, everybody.
Hey, Tom.
So here's a consumer advocate perspective on some of the same things you've been hearing about already.
Use the mic, please.
Sorry, here we go. I'm at the mic, and I'll look down instead of looking, if I need to, instead of looking over there. So, Cub. We're the consumer advocate for all the residential and small business utility customers in Wisconsin. We are nonprofit, nonpartisan, and independent. Our main focus is on the bottom line. So we focus on what customers are paying for their electric costs, and we advocate. We're kind of what we can sometimes be called the wet blanket. We're there at the PSC to say, you know, hey, is this thing really needed? Even if it's the cleanest thing possible, utilities have to prove there's a need for every new capital infrastructure that they put on. So our role, we're a nonprofit in 44 states and most of the country. The role that Cub performs is handled by a state government agency, such as an attorney general. So some context, you heard about the 60-year life cycle of some of these units. And so Wisconsin invested heavily in fossil fuels starting in the early 2000s. We have the new Elm Road plant in Oak Creek, which cost about $2.5 billion. We had about $900 million in environmental controls on the sister plant right next to it in South Oak Creek. And back of the envelope, roughly $6 billion or $5 to $6 billion spent on new coal or keeping existing coal going over the last 18 years. Some of the scrubbers that are keeping those coal plants going and helping with mercury pollution and other pollutants just came online in the last 2 years. You see on the right, you see the Pleasant Prairie Power Plant. It was 10 years ago this year, no, it was 12 years ago, that there was a demonstration project on greenhouse gas carbon capture and technology at that plant. The economics of coal have changed so rapidly that that plant shut down 2 years ago, 10 years after this demonstration project. So what is the impact of that? So we look at electric rates and compare them across the Midwest. The chart on the right shows We Energy's rate inflation since 2001, and the blue dot shows where it would have been if it had just been keeping pace with it, kept at the level of inflation over that time. The chart on the left shows that two of our utilities have rank in the top 10 among 50 utilities across the Midwest in terms of electric rates, and four of the top 15 are here in Wisconsin. And so what the utility said at the time was, you know, these are long-lived plants, and we're investing for the future, and we're ahead of other states on this building cycle. And other states will see rates rise as we stop building and they start building. But what's happened is we ended a building cycle, and then the utilities have taken what I call a hard left in their strategy with this, the sustainability commitments you've been hearing about. And so the challenge for the ratepayers' perspective is that we ended a building cycle expecting to have a break, and we're now starting another one. But it's a dramatic how times have changed. I was a reporter at the Journal Sentinel when Sam Johnson, of S.C. Johnson and Son, was leading a No More Coal rally through the streets of Racine before the Elm Road plant was being built. In the last 2 years, as Tyler said, all of our executives at the utilities are now saying no more coal or practically no more coal, as is the governor. So another take on the mortgage analogy. How do we pay? Do we have to pay twice is the question. If you have, if I'm selling a house, I move to the next house and I stop paying on the old house. That's with utility finance. Utilities still they have an earnings hole if they can't stop collecting on their capital investments. And so those billions that I just talked about remain to be paid off. But we still have, there's, I think, about 8,000 megawatts in the queue, or give or take, of solar. And so that would be, you know, 9 billion, 10 billion. So if it were all built in Wisconsin. So where this came home was last year in the rate case involving We Energies. And this is how we get right back to securitization. So Cub made the point that, you know, we don't, utilities have to get that principal back, sure, but should they get that, should they profit, continue to profit at that, at their 10% profit rate on an, on something that was already shut down a year ago and is no longer needed to keep the lights on? So, and that got some attention locally and in the energy trade press. And there I go. Tyler's computer is dry because I respect that. Sorry about that. So as I hang on to an ice cube for good measure, the settlement is the settlement last year ended up negotiating across the table with We Energies and reaching a deal. So we have an environmental, what's called an environmental trust financing law, which allows you to securitize or refinance a portion of the remaining balance. So after, there was about $400 million left to be paid off on that plant, and about $100 million of that was for pollution controls. So we have reached a settlement, and We Energies will pursue a case this year which will try to securitize and refinance to a lower interest rate $100 million worth of that that's remaining on that investment. And so our goal from a customer point of view is an orderly and efficient transition to that keeps the customer's pocketbooks in mind and enables the capital recycling that and reinvestment in cleaner energy, but keeps all stakeholders, including customers, in mind. And I'm happy to participate in the Q&A. Thanks.
Super. We are recording this session, and so we're going to have Elizabeth and Tom, please use the microphones so that your audio will come in here, and then when it's time for Q&A, we'll have our volunteer run this mic around, and so please wait for your question until it's in the mic so that it catches on the audio. So super exciting opportunities here. The economics are changing, and this is not just happening in Wisconsin. So wanted to get Elizabeth and Tom your thoughts. What are other states doing to handle this transition? What can we learn from them?
Do you want me to start, or would
sure.
you like to start? Is the microphone picking it up this close? Do I need it closer?
Yes. Oh,
how's
before
that?
You start, sorry. There are chairs in the front row over here, so I counted 10 chairs and 20 people standing. So, musical chairs. There's, and if people would fill in, just because we do have 20 people standing up, unless you don't want to sit down. Are there people that don't want to sit? Okay, a few. Half, but there is interest in sitting. So please come on over and sit down. Don't be shy.
Okay. Can I get a sense if people can hear me without me having to hold the mic? Am I close enough that you can hear me? Okay. Excellent. Thank you. Okay. So your question, economics are changing. What are other states doing to handle the transition? Yeah. So I'm just going to make 2 points. At the general level of economics changing, so aside from looking at what states are using securitization, what we're seeing is across the country, there are public utility commissions either ordering utilities to come in, or in some cases, utilities are deciding of their own accord to come in and do their own cost analysis. They're doing cost analysis of their fleet. They're looking at replacement power. And so in some cases, that's getting filed at commissions. In other cases, it's happening, you know, independently with the utility. But we are seeing more and more that's happening. You're seeing it with, you know, PacifiCorp out in the West. I should have more examples of the utilities, but point being, that's one way. But when it's looking at what's happening with securitization, people who are interested in this topic, everybody's talking about Colorado. So Colorado passed securitization legislation last year, but have not used it yet. So in that instance, you know, all eyes are on Colorado. If they have a new commission coming in, you know, back to this risk issue, the commissioners might say, well, you don't deserve a return on that coal plant that you have retired or are retiring. The utility may say, okay, maybe this is an opportunity to securitize. We'll remove that risk of a future commission deciding not to, you know, to disallow something that we have, you know, been feeling confident about so far, but with, you know, regulatory changes that can happen. New Mexico securitization was wrapped into an omnibus package. But part of what happened there is it took away some authority of implementing securitization from the commission. So there's a bit of a pushback, commissioners feeling a bit slighted in that case. So, those are some places where it's like really in flux and all eyes are on that. If you're looking at where it's being used today, I'm not going to get into these examples, but for those who want to Google, Duke Energy in Florida recently used it to finance $1.3 billion in assets of a closed nuclear plant in Florida, interest rate 2.72%, much lower than Duke's rate of return. So that deal saves customers $680 million over 20 years. You can look at Consumers Energy in Michigan, received approval from their commission. I won't go through the details. Consumers Energy in Michigan. And then in West Virginia, Allegheny Energy used ratepayer back bonds to finance pollution control upgrades. So those are a couple of examples.
Great. And I want to hear from Tom. And as far as we're using this term securitization, are there people that don't understand what that means?
Oh,
yep.
Sorry.
Okay. No, not a problem. I'm going to give my thoughts and then Elizabeth, Tom can. It's basically like refinancing, right? So let's say that you got a home mortgage and the interest rate was 10%. And then the interest rates drop to 4% and you say, oh, go back to the bank and refinance at a lower rate. Basically, the idea is that Wall Street has a lot of interest in offering bonds. So it would be a specific bond that a utility and a utility commission would authorize a utility to go get a bond at, say, 4% or 2.72% or whatever. Use that bond to pay off the remaining principal balance of the plant. And then the ratepayers would still have to pay off that bond, but it would be at a lower interest rate. So you basically your monthly payment would go down, and that's why we're talking about securitization.
Well, and the key there is it's a ratepayer back bond. It's not the bond is guaranteed by the ratepayers, not by the utility. And so you've got to make sure that there's a guarantee that the bonds get paid. So another critical piece of that is you need this non-bypassable component of it having to get paid back, which is why it requires legislation. So that is like the shorthand, but it basically is you refinance it with a rate payer back bond, and the way that it brings that cost savings is it's cheaper in the short term because it's at this much lower rate. They're paying the bond instead of paying the ROE on the asset. And it saves them money in the long term if that reinvestment is in renewables, which is far cheaper than the cost of coal. So,
right. And so the ROEs in Wisconsin are over 10% for our utilities. And obviously, being able to finance something at 2.72%, we talked to our colleagues at the Consumer Advocate Office in Florida about that Duke Energy securitization, and that's probably one of the better interest rates we've seen, and we're not sure so that's what we'll be looking for this year when We Energy files for a securitization approval for that balance on remaining on Pleasant Prairie.
So we do have a law. It's 15-plus years old, and our Senator Rob Coles, who was in our policy panel, was a big part of getting the law on the books. It's called Environmental Trust Financing, and it had to do at the time with the cost of the pollution controls that we were adding to the plants to reduce the air pollution. And the idea there was use these kind of bonds to pay for those pollution controls at a lower interest rate than – a potentially lower interest rate than what the – weighted average interest rate or the rated average return would be for utilities. So that's in place, and that's kind of the model. I'll start with you here, Tom, that the Pleasant Prairie is going to use that law. So talk to us about that law, and is that law going to be enough, or do you think that we're going to need more to make this transition work?
Well, so that law did accomplish something in the end. I think folks wanted to see it used a lot earlier while the pollution controls were actually being installed, but the utilities decided to, in the parlance, rate base that investment so that they could earn a return on that. But it still can be used retroactively, even in the case of Pleasant Prairie, a closed plant, or if it were for some of the other plants. But as I mentioned, we're only able to securitize or refinance 1/4 of the cost. So if Wisconsin wanted to take a bolder approach, and one option would be to securitize the whole thing, you know, basically be able to refinance the whole thing. And that's the Colorado example. That's some of the things that are going on in other states, right?
And Elizabeth?